Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a biweekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Maryland State Delegate Guy Gazzoni, representing District 13, including parts of Columbia, Clarksville, Fulton, Jessup, and Laurel. Welcome.
And Savage.
Savage, yes.
But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, what do you have to get us started?
Now, the big news, Paul, of course, is tomorrow is the big game.
The big game.
The big game, the Ravens-Steelers.
I see you got your purple, sort of purple shirt on.
I got my purple shirt on today.
You know, all the listeners can see it.
Trust me, I'm wearing my purple. You know, what made me laugh about this big game is Tom Cole on his blog this morning wrote something. He says that if you're not a football fan and you're not a Ravens fan or a Steelers fan, you're best off go to a movie between 4:30 and 8 tomorrow.
Hibernate.
Yeah, because you know, you just don't want to be around. You know, it's going to be ugly.
But so what do you think? What's your prediction?
It's going to be a tough game. This is the third time they played this year. We've beat them before in Pittsburgh. I said, go Ravens. Ravens by 3. Be close.
Right.
How about you?
I'm going to go with the Ravens by 5.
Okay. All right. Yep. Guy?
Tricky numbers.
Are you a Ravens fan?
I am a Ravens fan. Sad to say, I'm still hurting a little bit about the Colts. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just one of those guys. I grew up in Baltimore and Baltimore City, so.
So did I. Yeah. Get over it.
I know.
Move on, right?
Okay. All right. Well, then, of course, that was news kind of outside of the county, although lots of people in the county would be following it. But one of my favorite stories, it was in the Washington Post this morning. You know, at least in Howard County, we're fortunate. When the Howard County Public Schools decide to close 2 hours late or open 2 hours late in the morning.
Not always necessarily. Right.
It's a threat of, or even, you know, a hint of snow. We get text messages, which is very nice. You know, I get text messages on my phone. But in Prince George's County, they call you, and which is fine, except for this time around, in the last snowstorm, they called people at 4:30 in the morning.
It's a wake-up call. Okay, get up and time to exercise, right?
Well, this so enraged a Prince George's County parent that he contacted his own robocall company, and he set up a robocall to go to as many, he got as many of the phone numbers of Board of Education members as he could, and has a robocall, call them at 4:30 the next morning. And here was his messages. This is a Prince George's County School District parent calling to thank you for the robocall yesterday at 4:30 in the morning. I decided to return the favor. While I know the school district wanted to ensure I dropped my child off 2 hours late on a snow day, I already knew that before I went to bed. I hope this call demonstrates why a 4:30 a.m. call does more to annoy than to inform.
And then there's that.
Well, at least it was civil.
At least it was civil. And it kind of reminded
silver
me.
Silver lining, right, Guy?
Right? It reminded me of the story that Jim Roby told us about the time he got a call from a disgruntled homeowner.
Oh, about the snow shoveling?
Yeah, about the snow shoveling.
The street didn't get shoveled timely?
Yeah, because I called him at like, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. It was early.
Why hasn't my road been shoveled?
So what Jim did the next time around, he waited and made sure the street was plowed. He called the guy at 5 o'clock to ask him if his street was plowed.
To your satisfaction,
yeah.
Sir.
Is it look better this time around?
You know, Dennis, over the last year or so, we've talked a lot about animals, and I'm not sure why they keep coming up, but we have another animal story that's popped up this week here in Howard County. And apparently, you and I were talking about this before the show. When I read stories in the news, I very quickly tend to gravitate to one direction or the other, and I have a position about the stories, and I'm struggling with this one. And this story is about the 78 rabbits that were confiscated from a Columbia residence earlier this week.
78 rabbits.
That's a lot of rabbits.
That's a lot of rabbits. What, they didn't know the two they originally started with, they didn't know they thought they were both female?
I'm going to let you go there. Anyway, so upon anonymous tip, appropriate authorities came in, and they seized all 78 of these rabbits.
Right.
And, you know, I understand that it's inappropriate to be housing 78 rabbits, hoarding these rabbits in a townhouse.
It's
ridiculous. Yeah, I don't think it's appropriate. But, you know, what struck me about this, and maybe this is the lawyer in me coming out, and I apologize for that, but they came in. These people haven't even been charged.
There's right.
Apparently a woman owns this townhouse.
Right.
She lives there
right.
with her 18-year-old son. These people haven't been charged. The county comes in. They take all 78 rabbits. They take them over. They're now belong to the county. And the county is selling them for $30 a piece to reimburse, I guess, the county for neutering them.
For neutering them, right.
These people haven't even been charged.
Right.
I mean, I haven't looked at the law, and I don't know what the law is, but it strikes me as, here we're going to take away these rabbits that belong to these people, albeit they shouldn't be living in a townhouse. Maybe the lady's got a farm. Maybe she's got friends that want rabbits. Don't you think we should have some due process before we just run off and take 78 rabbits or 78 anything from a private citizen?
You know, Bob, we talked about this lunch, and again, I don't want to split hairs with you, but I had to use that line. Been waiting for it. But I'm a neighbor of these people. I want them, like, you know, I'm crazed about it. I can't believe that they allowed them to get that far to 78. So, yeah, I hear you, but you know what? 78 rabbits in a townhouse?
You know,
hello?
I apologize in advance for even going there. But you know what? It really strikes me, too. You got this woman living all by herself with her 18-year-old son. 78 rabbits. What's the progression here? I mean, you know, is this their idea of watching pornography? I mean, here we're watching 78 rabbits procreate. I mean, really?
Really?
Anyway.
Then there's that.
Sticking with animals, Friskies is back in the news.
You know what? This will probably be in the news when I retire from this show.
Well, it's been, what, like 10 years?
It's 10 years, I guess. It's, yeah. Guy, you know?
Oh, yeah, I was on the council.
You were on the council when this started?
Oh, yeah.
So it's been put off again.
Another hearing and another postponement.
Unbelievable.
Stay tuned.
Unbelievable. Well, yeah, and Friskies kind of ties into a story later we got on social media as the crazy way stories work in this county. But we'll save that for our two-minute guest today. So we'll shelve that story and get back to it later.
Which one's that?
The Friskies, because we have more to talk about.
Yeah,
it ties into the other story. Yeah.
Reservoir High School?
Reservoir High School's in the news. There's a woman who has kind of led a revolt against the administration of Reservoir High School, Julie Raybould, I believe is her name. I hope I pronounced that right. She is taking issue with the fact that Reservoir has had 1,379 suspensions in 7 years and is the most amongst Howard County schools.
Well, maybe that's a good thing, right?
Well, you know, I'm going to get there. And then the other thing, too, is that the Reservoir seems to have a higher turnover rate of teachers than any other school in the county. And this woman, Miss Raybould, believes that it's the problem. She wants the principal fired. You actually know this principal.
I do know Addie Kaufman. She was actually a principal at my alma mater, Mount Hebron.
Oh, she was? Okay.
Yeah, and then got moved over to Reservoir some time ago.
So she's a pretty good principal.
Good lady.
I think the issue is not, and what people aren't really talking about, is that Reservoir has a portion of the population that is has some problems.
North Laurel.
In the North Laurel area. They actually, I have a colleague of mine whose daughter just graduated from Reservoir last year. And she told her dad that it's really two high schools. There are the kind of the Maple Lawn, Fulton kids, and then there's the North Laurel kids. And they kind of operate in two different worlds at the school. So
during my day, it was the smoking section and the non-smokers. You know?
Yeah, it was smoking my day, too, but it was something else besides cigarettes. So. And then there's that.
Guys, is this your district?
It is my district, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, this is a hot issue in your district.
I don't know if it's a hot issue, but it certainly has been brought up a number of times. And actually, I've met with the woman, and we've talked about it. We've talked about getting sort of some standardized reporting on the state level of all schools, because, you know, if you're going to do a true comparison, you should probably get a bigger sample size and get clearer data, and that's what she's asked for. And we've looked into that.
There's going to be a community meeting, I guess, later this month. Are you going to attend that?
I don't know. I'll probably be in Annapolis, guess. Okay. So,
well, of course, on that note, we should introduce a guest. Paul, you want to do that?
We shouldn't. Who's our guest again?
It's this guy sitting between us.
That's right. Guy, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Guy Gazzone, also known as Guy Gazzone. I understand you go by both. Little name confusion.
Rose by any other name.
So they call me Scalney and Scalney, so I get them both. I understand. Guy's a member of the House of Delegates, I guess, since 07. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on continuing service.
Thank you.
And last year, you were the chairman of the House delegation for Howard County, correct?
I was, yes.
And you've now passed that baton to Ms. Bobo?
I have passed it to Liz, I've owned different things now.
Is this so you can free up time to begin laying your campaign for county executive?
Wow, that was quick.
Well, that's sort of at the end of my list.
Wait a minute. Let me look at my watch. That was 3.9 seconds. Excellent. Well done.
Thank you.
I'm going to continue to serve the citizens of Howard County in this capacity.
That's what I expected you'd say.
So you started the session this past Wednesday.
Yes.
I guess the word on the street, and it's been not unexpected, is the budget woes. that the state is facing?
Sure. I mean, ever since I came into office in the previous term, that is what we've been doing. I thought, first I got on the Appropriations Committee, and I thought, oh, great, money committee.
Yeah.
Get to spend some money.
Yeah, earmarks.
Right, yeah, but I learned quickly.
You guys like that, don't you?
Yeah,
spending money.
Spending money, yeah. That would have been a great thing. Unfortunately, what they didn't tell you is the Appropriations Committee is really the committee that cuts. And since the governor...
The committee of no.
Right, it's exactly right. Of course, since we have a strong executive state, the governor puts forward the budget, and the only thing the legislature can really do is cut, and that is the job of the Appropriations Committee. So that's what we've been doing, and we'll continue to do it again this year. This year, in particular, for me, I've got a new assignment. I will be chairing the Joint Audit Committee, so that's sort of a watchdog function, which is a new challenge, and I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully we'll be able to scrape some money out through that process also.
So what's that assignment involve? Who are you actually auditing, and what are you actually overseeing?
The state has, Legislative Services has an audit department, and they audit everyone, every department. And basically, a week or so prior to the release of those audits, they give them to the chairs of this committee, and we review it, determine whether or not there should be a hearing. And if there is, we'll bring in, particularly, obviously, in egregious situations, fish through it and hopefully come to some better conclusions and force these agencies, when they are not doing what they should be doing, to do what they should.
So the last 2 years, Maryland has been the beneficiary, I think, of roughly $1 billion from federal stimulus dollars, which has really delayed the inevitable. And
right.
Now we're sort of facing this $1.6 billion deficit, shortfall.
It's come home to roost.
It's come home, and it's time to deal with it. So what are the plans? I mean, there's been talk of an alcohol tax. There's been talk of a gasoline tax coming from appropriations. What about cutting?
Well, there's no question there's going to be cutting. There has to be.
And everything but my program.
Everything but your program. I mean, I think the thing that has been protected...
Which program is that?
Any program. That's just funny. You ask me, what should be cut? Everything except for the stuff that affects me.
Right, right. Well, you're not unlike just about everybody else.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Yeah, it's pretty simple.
You've heard that before?
I have heard that before. No doubt. And I will hear more of it this year, I'm sure. Look, the last 4 years, the governor has been very clear about education spending and funding and has held it in such high regard that while we would cut just about everything else,
you maintain the state, yeah.
We maintained funding there and actually had some slight increases over those years. So there's no doubt that that's where I think one of the areas is going to be. Medicaid funding is also another area. None of these things are attractive, of course, but there's no doubt that it's going to happen, and it's going to happen this year.
What about the teacher pension issue? I mean, that's a hot hide item. You know, prior to the session opening, there was lots of discussion whether the counties were going to have to pick up part of that.
Right.
Then O'Malley came out at the Maryland Association of Counties and said, no, we're not going to push that. But that's like not this year. He's not going to push it on to the counties. That's pretty inevitable, isn't it?
I'm not sure that it's inevitable. I don't know. It's somebody's going to have to pay is the bottom line. And pushing it there, to me, doesn't solve anybody's problem. It just forces the issue onto another department or another agency of government. Eventually, I think what will have to happen is some changes in the structure of pensions. And that's probably, to me, what is more important. Until we accomplish that, until we straighten out the structure of it, doesn't seem sensible to me to try to push it on.
Now, structure is an interesting word, but we're talking about, you know, revisiting benefits that state employees get.
That's right. And the way, I mean, length of service issues, spousal benefits, all those kinds of things.
Contributions to health care.
Absolutely.
Now, you're actually in the minority amongst your Harris County delegation in thinking that this is not going to have to shift to the county, right? Is that true?
Well, look, I don't know. I can't obviously speak for everybody, but I've watched the cycles, the good and bad times, and I've been around in government long enough to see that. And, you know, I'm also an eternal optimist, so I'm sort of hopeful as the economy rebounds, this might not be something that we absolutely have to do.
The sun will come out tomorrow.
That's it.
Really ought to stick to your day job.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, while we're on the subject of tax, Howard County's got a tax issue, I guess, up at the executive's behest.
On
the hotel tax.
Yeah.
A little bit of controversy on that. Senator Robey's not happy with the fact that Ken hasn't specifically put in the legislation that this money will only be used for economic development and tourism. Is that correct?
Well, he hasn't talked to me directly about that. I heard Senator Kittleman mention that in the hearing the other night.
Okay. Well, this was roving the paper. Was
oh, okay.
But didn't they actually agree at the hearing, I think, that evening to actually go ahead then and earmark those funds? I thought there was kind of a friendly amendment. There was an agreement on the county executive's part to do that. I thought there was. I may be mistaken.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
Okay. And nevertheless, what's interesting about this to me is a couple issues. First of all, and we're talking about a hotel tax, I think, raising it by 2%. And Howard County does actually have a lower hotel tax rate than surrounding jurisdictions.
Yeah.
So, of course, let's raise it so we can get equal with them. But what's interesting here is the
– Is that enough of a reason, though?
Well, I was trying to be facetious, but couldn't see my face there.
Just in case. Okay.
What's interesting there is that they are trying to earmark some dollars to tourism and they're trying to earmark some dollars to economic development. So they did the logical thing. They took the estimated $1.2 million in tax revenues and split it into three and gave $400 to EDA, or the proposals $400 to economic development, $400 to tourism, and then $400 to the county. So the first question is, why are we even doing this if we're giving $400 to the county? The whole purpose of it was sold to support economic development, tourism. So my first question would be, why are we doing that? And I know this is outside of your purview on the state level.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Those budgets that already exist for tourism and economic development are largely funded by the county to begin with.
Right.
So, I mean, you could easily make the argument that the county's general fund needs a little boost to help continue to support those budgets.
Well, and you took the words right out of my mouth for my second point, which is, isn't this a little bit of a fiction? Because if we earmark these dollars for EDA and tourism, what's to stop the county from then cutting the budget to those two organizations by the equivalent that's now been earmarked and earned for them?
They theoretically could do that. The county executive is committed not to do that. But a future county executive could come along and make another decision.
Well, the county executive also committed to not raise taxes, and he didn't take too long to come around and do that. So,
although what's interesting is you read about this tax, it's actually supported by the hotels.
It's supported by the hotels. It's supported by the economic development community. Look, they're taking this money in order to increase bookings. And they believe firmly that if they have that additional dollars, that they become sort of a real unit. Where right now they're sort of chipping at the edges. They're going to have the opportunity to help bring in more business.
And if those two organizations, both of which are very credible organizations, can create effective marketing plans to raise additional visitors to this community, it's going to be a win-win for everybody.
Another item on that I'm sure the General Assembly is going to be talking about that's near and dear to Howard County's heart are laws affecting petitions for referendum.
Oh, yes.
There are those who say that Howard County Maryland has some of the most stringent requirements for petition gatherers in the country.
Yes.
Do you see the legislature tackling that this year? Well,
interestingly, it got jammed up in the Senate by a committee chair. I don't know what it takes, personally, to get that unjammed in that one.
What committee chair was it?
I think it was Conway, Joan Carter Conway.
Oh, yeah. The same one who holds up direct shipping of wine.
Well, there's another thing that I was surprised it took you so long to get to.
I just got to squeeze it in
when
there.
When we're talking about the serious issues before the state, this is a critical one, and one I think it looks like we are going to pass this year.
Direct shipping of wine?
Yes. Yeah, and I support it.
We'll get back to that, but what about the
referendum?
Referendum.
Clearly there is a fairness issue, and, because you sign a petition and your middle initial isn't on there or...
If it's you, it's you. I mean, if we know that it's actually the person that signed it,
that's right.
We shouldn't be getting hung up on proper names or how you pronounce them, right?
We should not. I will say a slight flip side to this is that I personally believe that we need to increase the number of signatures before something is taken to referendum.
I agree with that.
And I actually voted for that. It was put forth the last charter attempt for a charter amendment. It was proposed and it was voted down on the county council 3-2.
Really?
Well, was that proposal to tie it to the population of the county?
It used to be
You're stretching my memory, but I think it was something along those lines.
Didn't it used to be a percentage of the or 5,000, whichever was higher, or something like that?
Well, that's where we are now.
Yeah.
Right. The 5,000. Right.
But it was a percentage or.
Right.
So it's like nobody anticipated the county would grow to be the size it is now.
Right.
So direct wire shipping, you think that's actually going to...
I do. Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Direct. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got my credit card ready.
Does that apply to just wineries or retailers?
I think it's going to be just wineries.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And, right. Like everything in Annapolis, things move incrementally. Yeah. And that seems like an appropriate incremental step.
Now, the other thing, we talked a little bit about the cuts. What about other ways to raise revenue to address the structural shortfall that we have? Alcohol tax and gasoline tax were both proposed this year.
I've been a long-time supporter of the alcohol tax, particularly, and this is an interesting juxtaposed to the hotel issue, is how do you guarantee it's going to be for the things that you care about or want it to be? Yeah. And I actually... one of the reasons that I support it is because I believe that we've done a woefully inadequate job of supporting those with developmental disabilities. So I think a big chunk of whatever revenues are raised should be going to that, with so many people on the waiting list to receive benefits who are eligible for benefits. That's one area in which I feel very strongly that money should go to. That in and of itself, or at least that part of it, what I'm talking about, wouldn't help with a structural deficit, right, if it will. But part of it could also.
And one of the criticisms, I think, of earmarking those funds to the disabled, and I agree with you that it's been woefully underfunded, is this really the right time to be creating new funding for projects that have not previously been funded during the shortfall that we already have?
I guess you say it's almost never the right time to raise taxes of any sort. This might be a bad time, but however, it's a really bad time for the people who have to live with the disabilities and the people who support those individuals who are living with those disabilities. It's always a bad time for them. So I believe we just need to step up.
And I correct me if I'm wrong, but Maryland has like one of the lowest alcohol taxes in the country.
It does, yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
I want to talk just briefly about civility in politics, and kind of on a local level all the way to a national level. We had a tragedy occur in this country last weekend, and there's been a lot of rhetoric, and of course I'm talking about the Arizona shooting.
Right.
There's been a lot of rhetoric over this last week trying to blame politicians, particularly right now the Republicans, for this having happened. I personally think that rhetoric in politics and debate and heated debates are healthy, and I think that's a good thing.
Part of our country's history.
Part of our country's history. Yeah. It's how we got to where we are today. And I think that's all good. But I think we're mixing apples and oranges. A lot of people get heated about politics. I've done it before. Many of us at this table have probably done it before. But it doesn't mean that we go shoot people.
Right.
So I think we're mixing mental illness and maybe allowing people with mental illness to buy guns with something that actually I think, if done appropriately, is a healthy thing in this country, which is politics. Look, and debate.
Debate's a great thing. It's an important thing. It is what makes us who we are in this democracy. But, you know, I'd have to disagree that there's a line. There's a tone. There's a place where you don't go. And a lot of that tone, I think, and where the line crosses is when you're dishonest. You're dishonest about what your opponent is doing.
Yeah, but wait a minute. I mean, I think it was Thomas Jefferson said that when John Adams was being considered for president, Jefferson said that the streets will run red with blood if Adams was elected president. I mean, that's pretty heavy rhetoric.
Well, Guy, I agree with you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I agree with you that there's a line, and perhaps we've crossed that line.
Right.
And that goes to the issue of we need civility at a heightened level in our society. But to blame this shooter. To blame politics for what the shooter did, I just think crosses the line.
No, I would never go so far as to blame it on that. Although, you know, it's like many things in life. You set a framework, you set an overarching place in society, and people live in that place. And if that place is comfortable to go farther, if we've made it comfortable to be meaner or nastier, if that's okay to be that, to me, we're setting ourselves up in a way. We're setting ourselves up for trouble. We should be setting the framework as an honest, civil debate. And if we do that, then, you know, you can't make that direct linkage, especially in this particular case.
Sure.
But I want a framework in a society that I want to live in that isn't about meanness. that doesn't have that as the overarching premise.
And I think you're absolutely right, and I think we can all agree on that. But then you get into legislating civility, and now there are proposals out there on the federal level of legislating what really can be said and can't be said to elected officials. Having been born in a communist country and having parents that grew up in that, you know, that's really scary.
That's a slippery slope.
You know, that's a slippery slope where you get to
next thing you know, they won't let us do podcasts.
Look, I think the Constitution and the courts have dealt with this issue for many years, and probably that's where it should remain.
One of the things that I worry about, you know, and we were talking about this over lunch, this country has a history of also the lone nut gunman, the assassin, that will just, for whatever reason, you know, whether it's politics or whatever, that they decide to make a name for themselves by an assassination attempt or an assassination. Will this have a ripple effect of affecting how you and other politicians view open forums like this? This lady was in a supposedly safe, Congressman Giffords was in a supposedly safe suburban shopping center, middle of the day, or actually early part of the day.
It's interesting. I'm going to share with you a personal story that just happened this morning.
Okay.
Very personal.
Right.
Actually, my wife, as I was leaving today, turned to me and said, "Have you thought about whether you would tell me or not if there were any threatening things?"
Death threat or
any kind of threatening, right, nasty letters. And I guess my point in mentioning that is that I think we're all going to be thinking about it. You know, we're going to be thinking about it. We're going to think about what it means to our lives. I don't think I'm not leaping out to say, I mean, I'm going to go out and continue to do the things I do. I mean, and who am I, quite frankly?
Your guy Gazzone.
Yeah, local legislator.
Gazzone to you.
Yeah, right. But
future candidate for county executive.
But it's worth, you know, we have to think about it personally, and we have to think about it as society, and we will. But I don't think it's going to be an immediate change in things.
But, you know, this reminds me of, we went through a period of time where we had a number of school-based shootings. And if you really look at the segment of population that spends the day in school versus the number of people that don't spend their day in school, the percentage of school-based shootings is really not any higher than it is regular society. And, in fact, the same is probably true with politicians and elected officials. So it's really a risk that we all run in society today in coming up against a gunman, a crazy person, or frankly, as we saw last week in Baltimore City, you know, a bad choice by a number of police officers and shooting one of their own. So it can happen anywhere, and I think we all think about some of the dangers that happen in life.
Sure. I think that's right.
Has this incident affected your views towards gun control at all? Or?
No, I think mine have been very clear over the years.
Yeah.
I very much support most forms of gun control, although, you know, it's not that I don't support gun ownership, because I do, but I think some guns are inappropriate. And I continued. I think the laws that we have on the books right now are sufficient in terms of what just happened.
Right.
Well, guys, we have to wrap up here and finish up our show. Dennis has joked around about it twice now, but we do want to ask you more pointedly. Hmm. What are your thoughts about your future? There's rumors of a number of Senate seats opening up from some retirees. Obviously, there'll be a county council race next time around. What are your thoughts other than continuing to serve the residents of Howard County?
Well, it's my hope that I will continue to serve the residents of Howard County. I don't know what capacity. It seems to me that I could have a lot of options. The Senate seat, staying in the House, building seniority in the House or the Senate is a big deal. To be able to accomplish things, you have to have some level of seniority.
Like the Appropriations Committee.
Yeah. Like the Appropriations Committee, that's right. And now that I'm chairing this audit committee, moving up. But that takes time. So those are options. County executive is absolutely an option. It's no joke or no secret.
No secret.
No secret, yeah. Maybe a little is a joke.
Then there's that.
Maybe it's a joke. But it's no secret that I seriously considered last time,
and for
a lot of personal reasons, decided not to.
Right.
So it's certainly something I'm interested in. One of the things about having even been on the county council on the county level is that it's so much easier to get things accomplished quickly. And if you have any level of impatience, which I do have a tad, going back to county level government, where you can really
get things done
quickly,
Has some appeal to it.
It has a lot of appeal to it. It has a lot of appeal to it.
Well, Guy, we thank you for coming by today. Thank you for being on the show.
And
I wish you much luck with your session.
That was fun.
So, thank you.
Joining us now for our...
our five-minute, two-minute segment
is Miss Jessie Newbern.
Welcome.
Welcome. Jessie is a communications consultant who's with a heavy expertise in the areas of social media, I'd say, right?
And multi-generational analysis.
Oh, God, yes.
Then
there's that. Jessie, one of the things that I wanted to kind of go over with you today, columnist for the Explorer Howard for Columbia Flyer, Doug Miller, has kind of waded into the murky waters of social media and kind of taking a little bit of an adversarial stance into the whole phenomenon. I just want to kind of get your take on that.
Thank you. I want to be a little gentle here because I'm concurrently...
You can be gentle. We don't have to be.
Well, I'm concurrently, a big proponent of an advocate for the cultural change that is coming... not just from the technology, but that it's a cultural change that is using technology to happen. So some people get confused, and I think, and say, oh, by the way, I actually got my degree in culture and technology and self-designed my major back in the early 80s. And so this has always been a subject area for me, just as a phenomena. But I think that it's really more that these things really are complex, and they're not just about tools, and they're not just about pushing buttons and hitting publish, but they really do speak to a shift in how information moves, which is very much why I got on the bandwagon very early with Hoka Blogs and understanding that as the bloggers became more abundant and connected and engaged in local activities, that how they were connecting and what kind of information they were covering and sharing and the community in and around who was talking about the community, which is very, very much involved, is an important part of managing the tenderness and the difficulty of the change.
Well, yeah, and Jesse, what I get, and we certainly get it from Larry Carson as well, there seems to be a pushback from some of the, we'll call them the professional journalists.
The mainstream media.
The mainstream media. Those who are paid to, and have training to write the stories the right way and be objective towards the blogs. And then the people that are just kind of, it's the Wild West of information dissemination.
And understandably, I mean, I think that I know for myself, when I'm mad about things or I'm upset about things, that there's the literal surface thing that I'm upset about, and then there's the more emotional undertow of why, which I think requires a level of maturity and sophistication and knowing
which
yourself
you have
over time.
I'm glad
so
somebody
clear
has, yeah.
I mean, without pointing to any particular one person, but the phenomena of the pushback, well, of course somebody would be upset because the technology and the culture shift and all is whittling away at the businesses that they had relied on for their professional ascension over the course of their lives, and it's making their futures less...
They're feeling threatened.
Of course, and
That's normal.
I don't get that. I don't get that.
They see it as creating an obsolescence of their current... structure, the current way they report stories, the current way that they are reporters, investigative reporters.
But haven't we given them more tools for reaching out to the community and reaching out?
But they're
not
comfortable with them. They don't know how to use them. They're lost. They feel threatened by you and by you.
Not all of them. I think some of the younger, even in Doug's column, he points out that he was made aware of the blogs by one of his younger colleagues. So maybe it is that generational thing you spoke about.
Part of the shift is generational, and that's another subject in and of itself. But I would say that again, to point back that people sometimes think that technology brings about the change. Sorry, I was using my hands and tapping on the table, and Paul very kindly calmed and quelled my hand. The technology does cause change, but it's the cultural desire for something to be different that uses technology to usher in change. And what I would say to the traditional media folks who are upset by this is look back at yourself and look at what you didn't take care of, which now you were given the opportunity to usher in more change and you didn't. And so I'm going to say something that may sound, political or whatever, but the citizens are rising up and saying, you didn't do it, and so now we will.
Right.
So, it's not that, I don't mean to be that black and white or whatever, but there is this kind of thing of, people have been complaining for years about media coverage and how
true.
So it's like, oh, well, you know, comeuppance.
So this new phenomenon's here to stay. It's going to continue to evolve. And,
probably about 15 years, and then it will go in the other direction. Then it will become it'll condense again.
I will give Doug credit. I should point this out. Tom Cole from Hoka Rising reached out to him to meet Sarah and myself and him for beers to kind of discuss this, and he's accepted. So we'll get that together and maybe report back. But speaking of that, I know you want to put a plug in for something near and dear to your heart. Hoka blogs the latest blog tail party.
Yes, and for those who don't know, it's actually Dennis who's originated the Hoka Blogs party. So I work on Hoka Blogs, which is a site. It's a community site, and any person, business, or organization in Howard County can be listed for free. And it's an aggregate site. It has its flaws, and it has its wonderfulness. But one of the things that I really like to do is have parties, which Dennis of Word Bones was the initial person who called for. It was time for the bloggers to stop complaining and have a beer together. So that was the initial thing. And since then, we've had not monthly, but frequent parties. Yeah. There's always a co-host. So anyone who's a blogger can be the co-host. And the next one is January 20th at...
It's next Thursday.
Thank you. At Second Chance Saloon. And Wendy Binder, who is one of the owners there, has been really generous in providing us three prizes, but the prizes, unlike the typical sort of raffle, actually are prizes that people will earn through social capital. So you'll be able to give yourself, there's a scorecard on the website. It's easy to find on Hoka Blogs on Facebook, and to find the invitation and the scorecard. And people will give themselves points. It's an honor system of, like, did you like Second Chance Saloon on Facebook? Did you tweet about it? Have you ever checked in on Foursquare? Did you use the hashtags? You know, so it's basically to help people who are having a hard time learning all these tools.
To give them a fun way to...
Yeah, a very fun way. Yeah. And it gives the restaurant who's kind enough to, you know, to open the doors and give us a prize, it gives them some, you know, some little extra love.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Jesse, thank you for coming by today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio, and to General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show today. We'll be back again on January 28th with another show and another yet-to-be-determined guest. Among the things we'll be discussing are civil unions in the state of Maryland. We hope you'll join us.